I see why you did it. Our lives imploded. The press were everywhere. If the roles were reversed, I might have run away too. My heart was pounding, thumping. My ears filled with the sound, as if the audio of someone else's heartbeat was being piped into the room. I hadn't been planning on telling him. I hadn't been planning on telling anyone, ever. I didn't even like reminding myself of what I'd done. But just like on the phone to Sal earlier, I could feel it coming. Feel the truth rushing to the surface, determined to break through. I couldn't stop it. I wouldn't try. "Will," I said, "there's something I have to tell you." Allison, now. I did something. My voice was a whisper. Back then. I couldn't look him in the eye. I focused on his hands, resting palms down on the table. I wondered how quickly Alec could get to the table. I didn't know how Will would react to this. At the time, I thought I was doing the right thing. To be honest, I didn't even realize I was doing a thing at all. Will frowned.
"What are you talking about?"
The room felt so still that I bet if the dust particles in the air became visible, they'd all be hanging in suspended animation, unmoving, frozen in place. I never thought for one second. I bit my lip. I just didn't want to get in trouble. Or for you two. I thought I was helping.
"Allison, what did you do?"
"They talked to us all," I said. "The Gardaí, back then. Do you remember? After Liz died. They came to the campus, set up that room at Hall's. We all went in one by one. They were just taking statements. You went in before me. I was standing outside the door. I could hear everything, Will. I heard what you told them. About the night Liz died. You said you were with me all night, but you weren't. Not technically." Will's face had hardened into an expressionless mask. "I left your room," I went on. "Do you remember? I left yours and came back to mine because I had a meeting with my tutor early the next morning." Will folded his arms.
"No, I don't really. It was 10 years ago."
"Well, it's true."
"So? I might have been asleep when you left."
"You were, I think." He threw up his hands.
"Then why did it matter?"
"Because that's not what you told them. The Gardaí. And because that was..." I swallowed. "Because that's not what I told them either. I went in afterwards and said the same thing. I thought that's what had happened. I was confused because they kept asking about our phones, about why I didn't hear them ringing. But everything was so crazy then, so mixed up, I wasn't thinking straight. But then later, when I was back in my room, I saw the calendar I'd up on the wall, and I saw that I'd that meeting with my tutor. And I realized I hadn't stayed the whole night. I'd left to go back to mine at some stage. Around 1:30, I thought. I got my nights mixed up."
"Wait a second. Wait a second."
Will tapped a finger on the table.
"Are you saying, did you think I went somewhere after you left? That I could have..."
"I was 100% sure you hadn't.
At the time.
I thought you'd just made an innocent mistake. Got mixed up like I had. But then they had that service at the chapel, and the chaplain gave that speech about us knowing more than we might realize, about how no matter how small the piece of information, no matter how irrelevant we thought it might be, even if we were sure it had nothing to do with it, he said we should tell them."
Will was glaring at me.
"I didn't want you to get in trouble, and I didn't want to get in trouble for telling them something that was wrong."
"What did you do, Allie?"
I looked down into my lap. I had Shaw's business card. I called him and corrected what I'd said. Will exhaled loudly. "I thought I was doing the right thing," I went on. It wasn't even about you, Will. It was about me. I'd made a mistake. I was fixing it. I didn't think for one second it would matter in the scheme of things.
Let me get this straight,"
Will cut in.
"You overheard me tell the Gardaí I was with you all night, the night Liz died. But you remembered waking up at some point to go back to your own room, leaving me alone sleeping, and instead of coming to me and saying, 'Hey, I think you might have got your nights mixed up. You went back to the Gardaí and told them I'd lied about my whereabouts the night Liz died. I shook my head. That's not what happened. Not at all. I thought I'd stayed there all night, so I said that I had. But then I realized I hadn't, so I went back and made a correction. That's all.
While you were doing that, did you happen to mention to them that I was definitely with you all night, every other night one of those girls was murdered? Did you tell them that?
I honestly didn't remember if you...
Well, I was. He spat at me. And if you did leave me that night, you left me fast asleep. What about the next morning? Where did we meet again?
I bit my lip. In your room.
In my room? Oh, really?
His tone was mocking.
And what was I doing in my room when you got there?
Sleeping, I said quietly.
I was sleeping. So if I hadn't woken up during the night, how would I have known that you'd even left? Wouldn't I think you'd been there the whole time?
Try to understand, I said. My best friend had just died.
Will rolled his eyes at this, and I hated him for it.
I was only 19, for God's sake.
So was I, Ali, Will spat. So was I.
I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. He waved his hand, faux dismissive. I get it now. You never thought I was guilty. You just needed me to be. So you wouldn't have to spend the rest of your life feeling bad that you'd taken away mine.
Will, what did I do? You told them you did it. That's what happened next. It's not all my fault.
I told you they forced that out of me. I didn't kill those girls. They made me say those things, and... He started to shake his head, disbelieving. And now it turns out I mightn't have been in that room at all if it wasn't for the person I cared most about in the world. The girl I loved. The one who I thought loved me.
I just told them I was...
You took away my alibi. You made me a suspect.
It can't have just been that, Will. There was...
You fucking bitch.
I recoiled as if I'd been slapped. I'd never heard Will say anything like that, let alone to me. Each word had been dripping with white-hot anger.
You know what's funny?
He laughed now, a soulless, mechanical sound.
All this time, I'm sitting here thinking that I hurt you, and it turns out that you fucking did this to me.
His face crumpled.
You did this to me. I loved you, and you're the one who did this to me.
They were there then, bodies, standing on either side of us, casting shadows onto the tabletop, Alec and the security guard, a hand on my arm, keeping me in my seat, a hand on Will's arm, pulling him up out of his. Alec led Will out of the visitor's room while I sat at the table, silent and dazed. A few minutes later, Alec came back for me, and I wordlessly followed him back along the glass corridor, through locked doors and into reception, where someone helped me open my locker and handed me my bag and phone. It took me a second to realize it was Malone. He asked me if I was okay. I lifted my head to look at him, but I couldn't think what to say.
The press have converged on your parents' house, he said. You can't go back there. Not right now, anyway. We're going to bring you into the station for a couple of hours, to wait it out, okay?
The station. More Gardaí. More people. More fluorescent lights. I couldn't deal with it. I wanted to go somewhere where there were no other people. Somewhere I could close my eyes, curl up and hide away. Is there anywhere else? I asked. I started shaking my head. I can't...
Malone thought for a second. Okay, there is. Come on.
Allison, then. It was a relief when classes finally began. I'd been craving routine, and neither my wallet nor my liver could have taken another day's worth of Freshers' Week. I was also anxious to start my course, to see what it was like, to see what going to college was like. I'd been waiting long enough for it. Secondary school and I hadn't got on. I'd hated pretty much everything about it. The fact that most of the day was taken up with instruction and subjects I detested. That everything was taught by the same small group of teachers, so if you had been lazy or stupid in another subject in a previous year,
The teacher would make that judgment of you whenever you met again. The itchy, scratchy uniforms, the long days, the hours and hours of homework that ruined what little of our lives were left over afterward. I felt uncomfortable every single day, like my own skin didn't quite fit, and counted down the weeks, 6 years worth of them, until it was over. College was to be my reward. So I threw myself into it wholeheartedly, armed with a collection of smooth, unblemished notebooks and 3 tote bags from the campus bookshop, stretched to capacity. The 3 things my parents were happy to cover the cost of without complaint. Shelter, food, and books. I came to class with the book read cover to cover, having highlighted sections and made notes in the margins as I went. I gave myself hand cramps, furiously scribbling down every last thing the lecturer said, then going straight to the library afterward to type my notes up on my laptop while the lecture was still fresh in my mind. I had a filing system for these in a series of color-coded folders. The teaching staff were all passionate about whatever their specialist subject was, and I couldn't help but catch it from them. I was in a constant state of exhilaration and panic at the thought of all the books I was going to read, all the books I could read, and how little time there was, really, to read books. This lasted a week, maybe 2. After that, I downshifted into more of a trying-as-hard-as-I-can mode. I read what I knew I'd be questioned on in class, or at least enough of it to form answers that implied I'd read the whole thing. I stopped typing up lecture notes. Then I stopped, by and large, taking lecture notes. If I hadn't finished a book by the time the class on it came and went, I wouldn't bother going back to finish it, even though the word exam loomed on the horizon. Sometime in mid-November, I started going to classes wholly unprepared, and soon figured out a way to hide this. I'd choose a seat out of the teaching assistant's eyeline. I'd scribble notes furiously. I'd ask questions rather than answer them. The lecturers were all teaching their specialist subjects. It didn't take much to set them off talking about them. Some of the books I'd bought the first week of term stayed in the bag I'd carried them back to halls in. I missed a class here and there, waited for some repercussion, but none ever came. There was no penalty for not going, it seemed. By the time December dawned, I was skipping lectures, going to only some classes, and was lucky to find a tattered notebook and a single working pen in my bag when I got there. I'd nudge the person next to me just as the TA came in and say, "Which text was for this week?" Because I was distracted by him. Will and I had become a couple slowly but steadily, although I was too scared to say anything to him that would invite confirmation or denial of this fact. We saw each other every other day, then every day. Then we were living out of each other's pockets. It wasn't so much that my life opened up a space for him and he moved in. It was more like our lives dramatically and suddenly melded together. He was just always there now. I wondered what I'd done with my time, my feelings, my need to be touched before him. Had I even had such a need? He was like a new friend in the beginning. Now he'd become something else, something more. If I wasn't with Will, I always wanted to go see him. When he was there, I didn't want to leave. I'd never felt that way about any other person. It was like the world had been dim and flat, and now suddenly it was in Technicolor 3D. Whenever Liz was with us, other people were too. I didn't know if we'd engineered this, he and I, or if she had. But Will and I were always either alone together or in a group. A little one formed by me, him, Liz, Claire, Claire's boyfriend Tom, and Lauren, who we didn't see all the time but most weekends. Or the bigger one we made whenever we went to the campus bar, or out in town at night, collecting or joining other little groups comprised of our classmates or St. John's Hall's neighbors. I think that's probably why I didn't notice it for so long. We'd all been looking forward to the traffic light ball for ages. It was to be held on the Friday before the midterm break, the last day of classes for a whole week. The morning of it, most of us had some form of assignment or essay due, the first one since we'd started at St. John's. The traffic light ball would not only be a chance to dress up and a fun night out that we had a whole week to recover from, but it would also be our reward for getting those damn assignments in. It was being held at the Burlington Hotel,
not far from campus. We decided it'd be fun to walk there in our finery, holding our floor-length skirts and dresses off the pavement, navigating uneven paving slabs in our towering heels, shivering because we'd refused to taint our outfits with outerwear appropriate to the temperature. Liz and I both wore our Deb's dresses, but swapped over. Her mother had had a business meeting in Dublin the week before and had brought them up for us, taking us out to lunch afterwards so we could update her on how we were getting on.
"Don't say anything about Will,"
I'd whispered to Liz at the very last moment, as we turned off Dawson Street and into the restaurant where her mother had made us a reservation. "I don't want it getting back to Mam." Liz made a face.
"You haven't told her?"
"Why would I?"
"I don't think she'd mind."
I shook my head. "I don't want to find out for sure, and I don't want the FBI-style interrogation that'll come with it if she gets wind of this." I shivered at the thought. "It's just easier this way, trust me." She'd winked at me.
"Your secret's safe with me."
True to her word, she'd mentioned nothing about him at lunch. Will wore a tux to the ball, and I couldn't stop looking at him. He'd worn it to his grad's ball, which I hadn't asked too many questions about, but which I'd inferred had been a week or two before he'd met me. I felt a tug of something at the idea that he'd been to a black tie affair with some other girl on his arm, but I tried to swallow it down. He didn't know me then. It didn't matter now. Being jealous was horrifically pointless. We were together at this now, tonight.
"You look beautiful,"
he whispered in my ear as we entered the ballroom. I didn't think I did normally, but that night, although I'd never have admitted it to anyone, I believed him. We picked up our stickers on the way in, red for in a relationship, green for single, orange for somewhere in between. Some of the guys took wrong colours for the laugh, and some of the girls refused to wear any at all. Maybe they'd had their first gender studies module. Maybe the colours clashed with their gowns. I took a red one and folded it somewhat discreetly around one of the straps of my dress. The venue was a huge ballroom, with a stage dominating one end. The band played from there. The bar was just outside it. A few tables had been installed on either side, but the majority of the few hundred students took to the dance floor and stayed there. We set up shop at a table near the stage, so we could dump bags in the boys' jackets and have somewhere to leave our drinks, which weren't permitted on the floor. But this also meant quite the trek from our table to the bar and back again. Will had hopped up any time my glass was nearing emptiness, so much so that I started to feel bad and offered to go get the next round. I checked with Liz and she convinced me that we should both get cocktails. I was waiting at the bar for more than 15 minutes for them to be made. When I got back to the table, Liz was sitting on Will's lap. She was sitting on his lap, angled to the side, with her arms wrapped around his neck. She was talking to a guy I didn't know who was sitting next to Will, in the seat Liz had been occupying when I'd left. Will was looking towards this guy too. He had reddish hair and freckles, and a thin, angular face. And if you were going off first fleeting impressions, and you were being unkind, you might have labeled him with terms like dweeb or nerd before it was cool. He was smiling widely, but I could tell by the look on Liz's face that she wasn't enjoying listening to him as much as he was clearly enjoying talking to her. And then, as I watched, she leaned her head to one side, turned and kissed Will, slowly and deliberately on the side of his face, an inch from his mouth. It looked so intimate, my stomach dropped. It had been a job to carry two cocktails and Will's bottle of beer back across the dance floor, and I was lucky that it didn't slip from my hands now. But I also felt like I absolutely could not, would not, react in any way. What was going on here? Liz and Will didn't even hug. I had never seen her touch him. It wasn't something I ever thought I'd have to see. But now she was sitting on his lap, something I had never done, something I wouldn't do. Such public displays of affection were embarrassing to me, and I would have thought, to him too. And doing it in front of everyone, in front of everyone we knew, and this guy with the red hair that I didn't know. And I just watched her kiss Will too. I reached the table then, and Will looked up and saw me. He flashed a look that, although the length of a blink, communicated enough for my chest to open up again and permit me to breathe.
He didn't know what was going on either, and he wasn't happy about it. Whatever this was, Liz had done it. "Here you go," I said loudly, putting Liz's drink down in front of her with a touch too much force. The pink liquid inside it sloshed and slipped over the lip of the glass. She didn't hop up in surprise or turn to me blushing with guilt. She just smiled and said, "Thanks," picked up the drink, took a sip. Like nothing was weird. Like she wasn't sitting on my boyfriend's lap and had just kissed him on the cheek. "You were gone ages," she said. "Was there a big queue?" I noticed that Will's hands were resting on the sides of his chair. He wasn't touching Liz anywhere except for the places where she was touching him. "No," I said. "There were two cocktails to make." I met her eyes. "What did I miss?" "Oh, this is..." She turned to the thin, red-haired boy. He was wearing a green sticker. I saw that since I'd gone to get the drinks, Liz had taken hers off. "Dan," he supplied. "Dan," Liz repeated. I smiled at him briefly. "Hi, Dan." There was an awkward moment when none of us said anything at all. "Excuse me," Will said, shifting in his seat. "I'm going to need a bathroom break before I drink that beer." Liz stood up to let him do the same. She sat back down again in his vacated seat. Will came straight to me, still standing by the side of the table, and slipped an arm right around my waist, pulling me toward him. "I don't know what the hell that was," he whispered in my ear. "She just jumped in my lap." He kissed my cheek. "Don't go anywhere, okay?" After he walked off, I resumed my seat, the one next to Liz. "We're all really good friends," she was saying to Dan. She turned to me, put a hand on my thigh. "I think I need a bathroom break too. Come with me?" When I looked up at her face, she was staring at me with a similar look to the one Will had had on his face a few moments before, like she was trying to tell me something, reassure me. I didn't know what was going on. "I can watch your stuff," the red-haired guy offered. I let Liz pull me up and off towards the bathrooms. She started swearing under her breath before we'd even cleared the dance floor. "That guy," she spat. "Dan, he's been following me around all night. He is such a weirdo." I'd never seen him before I'd seen him at our table. "I'm sorry about Will," Liz said in a gentler voice. "I just thought that was the best thing to do when he came over, so Dan would think I had a boyfriend. You don't mind, do you?" Ah, now it all made sense. I could feel warm relief flooding my veins, loosening my stomach muscles, restoring order to the world. "No," I said. "No, of course not." "He might leave me alone now," Liz said, pushing open the door to the ladies' bathrooms. "Let's hope." Sometime the following afternoon, I woke up in Will's bed. In a matter of weeks, I'd gone from being paranoid that I was the only 18-year-old on Earth who hadn't had sex yet, and also feeling abject terror at the thought of changing that, to sleeping with Will almost every night. It wasn't a big deal. It felt perfectly normal. It reminded me of something I'd read in a magazine a few years ago that I didn't quite understand at the time. Sex is like air. It's only important if you aren't getting any. We'd stumbled home after the sun had come up, having stayed out for so long that we'd come back practically sober and fallen into bed happily exhausted. I didn't have a headache, but my stomach was sore and unsettled, which I put down to the bottle of cava that had appeared towards the end of the ball. I wanted a shower, something greasy for breakfast, and a day spent watching movies on my laptop, with Will in bed. Not this bed, though. The room was stale and smelled of beer. We should go do it at mine. When Will woke up, I told him this.
"That was weird last night," he said as I lay in his arms. "With Liz, wasn't it?"
I hadn't had a chance to tell him why Liz had done it, to get rid of that weird guy by convincing him she had a boyfriend. I did now.
"Hmm," was all Will said.
"What?"
"It's just that, I don't know, it happened before that guy Dan ever appeared. Liz had been sitting in my lap for like more than 5 minutes when he came over."
I sensed there was something Will wasn't telling me.
I rolled over onto my stomach, rested my chin on his chest.
And?
And what?
What aren't you telling me?
She'd had a few too many, and she's your friend. I'm sure it wasn't... It probably wasn't anything.
What wasn't?
Will touched my hair.
You were gone to the bar, just. She started going on about how we'd make a great couple, her and I. And then she was all, I'll prove it. And that's when she got up and sat on my lap.
I turned and lay on my back again, stared at the ceiling.
Are you mad?
Will asked. No, he smiled.
Liar.
She just had a few drinks, a few too many, like you said.
I meant at me.
At you?
You didn't do anything.
I tried to let her know I was really uncomfortable.
I wanted to ask how he had done that. I wanted a second-by-second debrief on exactly what had occurred. I wanted reassurance several times over that he hadn't for one moment enjoyed the feeling of Liz being so close to him, that he hadn't imagined for as much as a second what it might be like if he was with her instead of me. But more than all that, I didn't want Will to think I was crazy.
It's not a big deal, I said. Don't worry about it.
We lay there in silence for a minute. Then Will leaned over and kissed me, pulled me closer.
Can I ask you something? He said. You and Liz. Do you even like her?
I scoffed.
Of course I do. She's my best friend.
But Will's question was a tug on the thread. Soon there would be an unravelling. Allison, now. Malone drove me to his place. We took the motorway. Outside of the city, grassy hills rose up into the sky ahead of us. The Wicklow Mountains, I presumed. This was an unusual sight for me. The Netherlands was as flat as a pancake, with uninterrupted horizons on offer as far as the eye could see. After half an hour or so, he took an exit named for a place I'd never heard of, leaving the mountains behind us. We passed a massive retail park and then, a stretch of nothingness later, turned into a complex of newly built apartment blocks, the only blip on an otherwise flat and featureless landscape. The block closest to the entrance had a number of commercial units on its ground floor, each one sitting vacant with a prime retail space opportunity, sign hanging amidst the grime and dust on the storefront. The windows on the first floor were dark and bare. Someone or something had punched a jagged hole in one of the panes of glass. Malone turned the car onto a road to the left, the tires crunching on loose gravel.
Ghost estate,
he explained to me. Ran out of money before they could finish it. I could see a large green area on our right, tall with grass and thick with weeds. Beyond it, access to a row of small, boxy houses sans windows was blocked by a chain-link fence.
It's bleak, I know. They say they're picking construction back up in the next couple of months, though, now that the country's getting back on track a bit.
Those were the first words either of us had spoken since we'd left the CPH. After we'd got into his car, Malone had told me that this was where we could go. I'd nodded silently, then turned to stare out the window. I could only think about my meeting with Will, the pain etched on his face, the sick feeling in my stomach. I'd feared all this time that the Gardaí picking him up back then had had something to do with me correcting my statement. I'd always told myself that there had to have been more to it than that. But was there?
It's fine, Malone was saying, so long as you don't look out the windows too often. And we got it for a song. I just keep telling myself that.
The we brought me back. Was there going to be someone else here? I couldn't face a stranger right now. Malone wore no ring, but that wasn't to say he wasn't living with someone.
I spoke to your mother, he went on. That was when I thought we were going to Pier Street Station, though, but she knows you're with us. I said you'd be back to Bray tonight once the press pack outside give up for the day, but I think she'd appreciate a call from you. She said to tell you your dad's back. Oh, and your suitcase is in the trunk.
Garda Cusack collected it for you from the hotel. We checked you out of there. What about the girl? I said. The missing one.
We're looking for her.
Do you think she's...
Malone kept his eyes straight ahead.
We don't know yet. The Sobaqua team is at the canal.
Who is she?
Her name's Amy Boylan. One of her roommates raised the alarm this morning. Under normal circumstances, we wouldn't move on this so quick, but with circumstances being what they are.
Where was she last seen?
That's the thing. In halls. Someone saw her go into her apartment around 9 last night, but she's not there now and she hasn't been heard from since. Plus there's some... Well, let's just say there's a couple of reasons to be concerned for her safety, based on what we found in her room.
Her room? Do you think he was in there?
We don't know. We don't know anything yet.
What about the guy in my photo?
Malone had pulled up in front of an apartment block to the rear of the complex. He cut the engine, turned to me. We've made some progress. The photo was posted by several online news outlets an hour or so ago, and I hear we already have several actionable leads. And I have a list of St. John's Hall residents for the year you were there. You can have a read of it. You might spot his name. Remember it when you see it.
So you don't know who he is yet?
I think we will soon. Especially because his face is going to be all over the papers in the morning, with a headline about another girl missing, so people will have to take notice. We've also got officers canvassing the public along the canal, from Grand Canal Dock all the way to Portobello.
His apartment was on the second floor of a four-story block, overlooking the wild, weed-filled green and facing the fenced-off, unfinished houses. I parked my suitcase in the hallway, next to the cardboard archive box Malone had carried up with him from the car. I paused to listen, but elsewhere in the apartment there seemed to be only silence. I was relieved we were alone. I walked into an open space that seemed to be the kitchen, dining room, study, and living room all rolled into one. It was spacious and full of natural light, but also felt bare and cold. The fading light coming in the double balcony doors had an odd quality to it, as if this was a film set and the bulbs playing the part of the sun had been hung in the wrong place. Furnishings-wise, there was only an oversized black leather couch, an IKEA coffee table with a coffee ring in one corner, and a large flat-screen TV on an 80s-era chrome stand. A silver laptop was thrown on the couch. There was nothing on the walls and few personal effects.
I know, Malone said. It doesn't get much better inside, does it?
He started a circuit of the room, turning on the 3 floor lamps, more instantly recognizable IKEA bargains, as he went.
My ex was the decorator and she took it all with her.
He pointed to the wall above the couch where, now that I looked, I could see a number of bare picture hooks and, close to the window, the faint outline of something that might have once hung there.
I've been embracing the minimalist look. Maybe now that we've a few hours to kill, you can help me buy some cushions online or something. I don't have a clue. Your place was really nice.
Really homely. He turned and smiled at me. I burst into tears. It was as if I couldn't hold back the pain, the stress, the shock of all this another moment longer. I'd spent everything I had doing it this long. I didn't have any strength left to be embarrassed about it. I just let myself break open. And then Malone was there, putting his arms around me, holding me, which only made things worse, even more embarrassing, his skin against mine, like Will's had been. I pulled away. I'm sorry, I said, wiping my eyes, regretting that today of all days was the one I'd elected to wear a coat of my mother's mascara. I'm sorry, I just... That meeting with Will was...
I stopped. I couldn't say it. What happened?
I told him something. I sat down on the couch, pushed my hair out of my face, trying to pull myself together. He didn't react well. Malone sat down beside me.
What did you tell him?
I explained about overhearing what Will had told the Gardaí when they'd come to talk to us on campus, and initially telling them the same thing, but then realizing, after I saw the tutor appointment on my calendar, that I'd mixed my days up and actually, I hadn't stayed in Will's room the whole night. I didn't really think it was a big deal, I said. I didn't want to get in trouble, that's all.
I didn't want him to get in trouble either. I didn't think he would. He'd been asleep. How was he to know?
A shadow of something crossed Malone's face, but all he said was, "Hmm."
But I think now that's why Will was brought in for questioning. Shaw said the others on the list had alibis, so when I took Will's away, effectively, and if the confession was coerced, this could be all my fault.
Alison, you can't think like that, really. You don't know what would have happened. You can't blame yourself.
Easier said than done.
I shook my head.
This is such a mess.
Everything might be different tomorrow.
Malone sighed.
Are you hungry?
I could order some food. Or make some, but that would just delay the ordering because, trust me, we'd end up doing that anyway.
I managed to smile. Okay.
Pizza all right?
Pizza's great.
Malone took his phone out of his pocket and pulled up a delivery app.
Any dietary requirements?
Just calories.
I waited until he'd placed an order. Then I asked him,
"Do you still think he's innocent?"
Malone frowned.
I never said I did. I said I thought there was a chance he was. I wasn't sure.
Because the evidence doesn't match up?
Because I'm not sure it would have survived in a courtroom.
Shaw says it's always like that. Not everything adds up.
That's true, Malone said, nodding. That's very true. But I think this goes a bit further than that.
In what way?
A beat passed.
Look, Alison, Shaw pulled me up this morning for telling you too much, and he was right to. I've tried to stick to the closed case, to Will's case, and I would argue I haven't told you anything that you couldn't have read online somewhere. You didn't, though, did you? Read stuff about the case, before we came to see you in Breda.
I shook my head. Until you knocked on my door, I'd avoided knowing anything about it.
So you're hearing all this for the first time?
Yes. But now I want to know. I want to know the truth. I want to know what actually happened. I don't want to go back home and spend the next 10 years wondering if I'd spent the last 10 being right or wrong.
I met Malone's eyes.
In that case,
he got up to pick a remote off the TV stand.
I have something to show you.
What?
Malone collected his laptop from the floor and came and sat next to me.
Will's confession, he said, opening the computer's lid. Video of it.
Alison, now.
Back in September, Malone explained, opening an internet browser. A 2-part documentary aired here on TV3. The theme was personal safety in the digital age, but they did a segment on the Canal Killer case. They opened with it, actually. Their thesis seemed to be that people around the country, especially in Dublin, changed their behaviour because of it. Women avoided walking home alone. They regularly changed their daily routines. They didn't share personal information in public arenas. But now, 10 years on, the lessons of it have been forgotten. Things are worse than ever. We need to be more mindful of how we use social media, that kind of thing.
What a luxury it must be, I thought, to be able to forget.
They featured a few cases, Malone continued, from here and abroad, where online information, Facebook posts, geotagging data in photos, video blogs, inadvertently provided what was essentially a digital map to the victims' doors. They also brought in some security experts who combed through the digital footprints of some willing participants to show them just how much information could be mined about their whereabouts, habits, things like that. The segment on Will featured footage from his confession. Now the whole tape is like 10 hours long or something, so what they showed is a snippet. And I should say, Shaw is both a great detective and a seasoned interrogator. He's actually delivered interrogation training to some of us, myself included. But I watched this when it aired and, well... Malone picked up the TV remote and pressed the power button.
See for yourself.
His internet browser was on a catch-up TV player.
He navigated to a list of video clips, selected one, and then clicked the icon that would make it play on the TV screen.
Have you ever seen any of this?
He asked me. I shook my head.
No.
If you want me to turn it off at any point, just say so.
Is there... I swallowed. Does he give details?
There's nothing graphic in these clips, no.
Malone skipped the video through the opening titles, and shots of a man with grey hair walking along Grafton Street, speaking directly into the camera, faces in the crowds of shoppers behind him turning to look.
I'll just show you the interrogation bits, he said as a shot of a 19-year-old Will being led into a Garda car in handcuffs flashed up on the screen. My palms were suddenly clammy. I rubbed them against my jeans.
Then there it was, the interrogation playing on the screen. The footage was of low quality, fuzzy like a well-worn VHS tape, despite only being 10 years old. It showed a small corner of a grey room, in which a table had been pushed up against a wall. A flat black box was sitting on it, the recording equipment, I supposed. The camera was mounted on the ceiling. On one side of the table, with his back to the camera, was a man in a blue shirt with patches of grey hair only partially obscuring the sheen of a bald head. Detective Shaw. Sitting across from him, hunched over. Will. My Will. I even recognized the t-shirt he was wearing. I'd slept in it once upon a time. Another man was sitting beside Shaw, but only his legs were visible in the shot. Who's that? I asked, pointing.
That'd be Detective Inspector Gerald Moynihan. He sat in, but it's Shaw who conducted the interrogation.
There's no solicitor.
Before 2014, solicitors weren't in Garda interviews under Irish law. As far as I know, Will came in voluntarily, at first anyway, a casual chat. After a few hours, the tone changed, and he asked for a solicitor. But he and the solicitor would have met privately. The solicitor could advise Will about the interview, but when the interview itself began, the solicitor would have had to leave the room.
Even though he was only 19?
Malone nodded. 19 is still an adult.
Large figures appeared floating in the middle of the screen. 11:23.
They show a series of clips, Malone explained, in chronological order, and they've time-stamped each one. I think their point is, look at this nice guy, you'd think butter would melt in his mouth. You'd have no qualms about him if you met him on the street. But watch as he eventually breaks down and confesses to his horrible crimes. This is right at the beginning.
The audio was mumbled, barely coherent in places, but captions accompanied it at the bottom of the screen.
Shaw. Where did you meet your girlfriend?
Hurley.
She's in St. John's too, but the first time we had a conversation was in a club.
Shaw.
What did you do, buy her a drink?
Hurley.
This creepy guy was annoying her. I went over and pretended to be her boyfriend to make him go away.
Shaw.
That was very gentlemanly of you.
On screen, Will laughed easily, smiled.
Hurley. That's what she thought too.
Malone glanced at me and I could feel my cheeks start to colour. I didn't realise the entire nation had been treated to that story, I said. How wonderful.
Don't worry, they bleeped out your name.
I didn't bother pointing out that any half-arsed Google user could find it pretty quick. The presenter reappeared, this time walking across the front lawn of St. John's, and Malone quickly skipped ahead to the next interview shot. Will looked to have slouched a bit more in his chair, but other than that, his demeanour hadn't changed. 13:25.
Shaw. You live on campus. You must be coming and going by the canal all the time. You and your girlfriend. She lives on campus too, right?
Hurley. Yes.
Shaw. You ever see anything unusual around there, Will? Anything that might assist this investigation?
Hurley.
No.
Shaw.
What about on the nights of the murders?
Hurley.
I don't know when they were.
Shaw.
You don't watch the news?
Hurley.
I mean, I don't remember those nights specifically. I couldn't tell you where I was, but... And I have only spent a handful of nights apart since October. More than likely I was with her.
Shaw.
But you must remember the night Liz died.
Hurley.
Of course, yeah. I knew her. She was... best friend. I meant the others.
Shaw.
So you know where you were?
Hurley.
With. We went to a bar, then she stayed over in my room.
He starts off with Liz, Malone said, speeding forward again, because Will knew her. So Shaw is thinking, that's the one where it'll be the most difficult for Will to keep himself detached from what he did. For Will to be able to lie about it. The others, they were practically strangers to him, but with Liz, his girlfriend's best friend, his friend, there might be a way in there. A crack in the armor Shaw can try to pry open.
1405, Shaw.
Spent the whole night with you. When you woke up, she was there.
Hurley.
Yes.
Shaw.
On the night Liz died.
Hurley.
Yes.
Shaw.
What time did you guys wake up?
Hurley.
I don't know.
Shaw.
Was it bright outside?
Hurley.
Yes.
Shaw.
Could you estimate a time?
Hurley.
I don't know. Maybe 8 o'clock? That would be a guess, though.
Shaw.
Did you set an alarm?
Hurley.
No, I don't think so.
Shaw.
What time did you go to sleep?
Hurley.
We didn't bother going on to the club, so around 11, maybe?
Shaw.
If we asked where she was that night, what would she say?
Hurley.
The same. That's where she was.
Shaw.
You know, I'm not sure she would.
Hurley.
I don't understand.
Shaw.
According to campus security, she accessed the door of her apartment at St. John's Halls at 1:35 a.m. She met a friend of hers in the stairwell as she was leaving around 8 the next morning. So she didn't spend the night with you, did she? She went back to her own room at 1:35 a.m.
On the screen, Will frowned, confused.
Shaw. What do you have to say to that?
Hurley.
I don't know. I was sure she did. When I woke up, she was there.
Shaw.
In the bed with you?
Hurley.
No, she was already dressed.
Shaw.
Let's move on to Lauren Murphy. You knew her too, right?
Hurley.
Sort of. Not very well.
Shaw.
But you'd been out with her a few times.
Hurley.
As part of a group, yeah. I'm not sure I ever really talked to her, though.
Shaw.
Did you ever follow her home, Will?
Hurley.
What? No, of course not.
Shaw.
Maybe follow is the wrong term. Did you ever walk her home? Or walk behind her to check she got there safely without her knowing?
Hurley.
No.
Shaw.
You sure about that?
Hurley.
100%.
Shaw.
So if we asked her friends, they wouldn't tell us that they frequently saw you following Lauren across campus, watching her from across the classroom, somehow always ending up in the same bar, the same club, the same spot.
Hurley.
If they did, they'd be lying. They're insane if they're saying that. Are they saying that? They must be mixing me up with someone else.
Were her friends saying that? I asked.
Malone shook his head. Listen to how Shaw phrased it. So if we asked her friends. He hasn't asked them. He's just trying to convince Will that he has, that he already knows what's gone on. Shaw's whole thing is, I already know the truth. All I have to do is sit here until you confirm it for me.
Can he do that?
Malone started speeding ahead again. That's the whole aim of the game, Allison. We can't go into interrogations with the attitude that the subject is innocent and we just want to double check. We're there to get what we need. I notice that this doesn't even occur to Will. After all, it's not supposed to. His reaction is to explain away the fact that the friends have said that. Will asked for a solicitor after this. They talked for an hour before the interview resumed. You can see how he's changed. He's realized this isn't a friendly chat. He knows he's in trouble.
Indeed, in the next section of video, Will was very different. He wasn't as animated, and he wasn't answering Shaw's questions as quickly. He looked tired to me. 1705, Shaw.
We know what happened that night. We already know. We know everything. We know all the details. The exact sequence of events. Who was where, who did what, when. All we need is for you to confirm for us. We're just trying to help you out here, Will. You help us, we help you. You want to see your parents, right? You asked for your dad. We can bring them in. But first we need to hear some truth from you.
Hurley.
I'm not the canal killer. This is crazy.
Shaw.
How did you get them in the water, Will? How did you get them in without them making any noise? That's the bit I can't figure out. Just tell us the truth and we can get you out of this room, Will. Come on now. You'll feel better. Look, I'll tell you what. I'll say what I think happened, and you just confirm yay or nay, okay? That might be easier for you. I know this is hard.
Hurley.
I didn't do anything.
Shaw.
Will, we know what happened. I've told you this. Just tell us what happened. Let's work backwards. Let's start with Liz.
This kind of thing went on for hours, Malone said, fast-forwarding. Look at the timestamp on the next clip.
21:15.
Shaw.
You can't get out of this, do you understand me? We've collected evidence against you. We know exactly what happened. We just need to hear it from you.
Look, Will, we all make mistakes. Things happen in the heat of the moment. Nobody's perfect. Maybe you didn't mean to hurt those girls. But if you don't tell us what happened, we can't help you here.
Cooperation is key, Will. Come on now. Help us help you.
The figures on screen morphed into slightly different positions. Some footage had been skipped over, edited out. Now, Will seemed to have caved in on himself, shoulders hunched forward, head dropping.
Hurley, inaudible.
Shaw.
Okay, what?
Hurley, inaudible.
Shaw. Say again?
Hurley.
I did it.
Shaw.
What?
Hurley.
Liz.
Will wiped at his face with the back of his hand. He'd started to cry.
Shaw. I need more than that, Will. I'm going to need specifics. You're doing so well. Can we go a little bit further? Can you give me specifics?
Let's work backwards. Most recent first. What can you tell us?
What about Liz?
Hurley.
She fell in the water.
Shaw.
Fell? I don't think she fell, Will.
Hurley. Inaudible.
Shaw. It wasn't an accident. You put her there.
Hurley.
I'm so sorry. I didn't mean it.
Shaw.
What happened before she went in?
Hurley.
I don't remember.
Shaw.
Come on, Will. We both know that's not true.
Hurley.
Inaudible.
Shaw.
You had an argument, okay. And then what?
Hurley.
I pushed her in.
Shaw.
What happened before that?
Hurley.
Before the argument?
Shaw.
After the argument, but before she went into the water.
Hurley.
I don't know.
Shaw.
You don't know? Come on now, Will. We're making progress. Don't go backwards on me.
Hurley.
I hit her.
Shaw.
You hit her.
Hurley.
I don't remember with what.
Shaw.
That's okay. We'll come back to it. For now, though, I want to move on to Lauren.
Turn it off, I said. I can't. Just turn it off.
Malone pointed the remote at the screen and it went black. That's practically all of it anyway. Of what they included in the show, at least.
I thought I was going to be convinced after this.
I flopped back against the sofa cushions, deflated.
There's no smoking gun here.
Yeah, okay, they bullied him a bit. They kept at him for hours. But I think that's probably okay when 5 teenage girls have been dragged dead out of the canal.
No, Malone said. There's no smoking gun.
He tapped the laptop's keys. But there's this. Listen.
From his computer speakers came the audio of the last few seconds of the clip. Without the benefit of reading the captions, I had to concentrate purely on what was said. And this time, when Will said, I hit her,
I heard something slightly different. A question instead of a statement.
I hit her?
He's guessing, Malone said. Will's guessing what Shaw wants him to say, because he wants out. And here's the thing. How the girls got their head injuries was kept out of the press. We knew it was from an impact with concrete, but we held that back for verification purposes. The canal killer was knocking them unconscious by knocking them down to the ground. But Will couldn't have known this. All he knew was that they had head injuries, so he assumed, like I think most people would, that those injuries were inflicted with a weapon of some kind. And Shaw, sensing that Will was going to contradict this, quickly redirected him. Malone played the audio once more.
I hit her?
You hit her.
I don't remember with what.
That's okay. We'll come back to it. For now, though, I want to move on to Lauren.
But why? I said, throwing up my hands. Why would anyone ever confess to a murder they hadn't committed? I just don't get that.
Malone shrugged. It happens all the time. The subjects are tired, stressed, young usually, and they have someone trained in interrogation telling them they know what happened. They know they committed this murder. The doorbell went. The pizza had arrived.
I might just wash my hands, I said as Malone stood up to answer the front door. While he was paying the pizza guy, I collected my suitcase and took it with me into the bathroom down the hall. It occurred to me that someone, Garda Cusack, would have had to pack it for me. When I'd left the hotel that morning, I'd thought I was just going out for coffee and had left stuff strewn about the room. A quick check confirmed that everything was present and accounted for, although an eyeshadow palette had broken and dusted glittery specks everywhere. I pulled out some makeup wipes and did my best to clean up the mess on my face made by my latest mortifying crying episode. I sprayed some deodorant and washed my hands. I took off my heavy sweater and folded it away inside the case, and it was then, when I was zipping it back up, that I saw it. The small pocket at the front of the case, on the outside of the lid, was open. I never used it, because I thought it was the quickest way to get something stolen from you. Anyone could reach a hand in there while you were trailing your case behind you and grab a passport or a phone. But now the zip was gaping open, and I knew I hadn't done it. So I reached my hand in and swept back and forth inside the pocket, thinking Cusack had chucked something in there. I felt a sting and jerked my hand out, seeing a thin slice in the skin on the tip of my index finger, a paper cut. Sucking on it, I pulled out what had caused the injury with my other hand. A fresh sheet of A4 printer paper, folded in half. I unfolded it, rotated it, stared at it, confused. It was a photocopy of a short typewritten letter. There was no date in the letter itself, but a stamp in the top right-hand corner said it had been received at some unnamed place on the 17th of April, 2007. Sir, congratulations on your article of the 14th of April last. Privacy is the best protection. I'm glad to see that someone understands what this is all about. They're looking for me instead of at them. If they'd been more careful, I wouldn't have had to get involved at all. Keep up the good work. C.K. The letter Will had mentioned that other patient had told him about. The one the killer had supposedly sent to the St. John's News, the college's student newspaper. This must be it. But why was it in my suitcase? My first thought was that Cusack had put it there, because she'd packed up my stuff. But that made no sense. My second thought was my open hotel room door. I convinced myself that it was a side effect of a dead lock battery, and the fact that nothing had been disturbed backed me up. But what if nothing looked disturbed only because nothing had been taken? What if someone had come inside to leave something there instead? My third thought was of the man on the bench outside the hotel. The one I thought was the same guy in the red baseball cap, captured on CCTV cameras in and around the canal of late, who was definitely also the unidentified guy I'd gone to a club with at least once back when all this had begun. Had the killer been in my hotel room? Did he leave this for me?
This is his first dead body. He stands in the shed with his arms folded across his chest, regarding the garbage bin like a foe. He knows better than to use the internet to search for help with something like this. He read a couple of books a few years back on the subject, but he can't recall any hard facts from them now, and he doesn't want to leave her here, alone, while he drives home and gets them. He's just going to have to figure this one out. He's glad he slept. His headache had dissipated. Another benefit is that the afternoon and early evening have passed and darkness has fallen. He can leave the shed door cracked open while he works. He needs to because something, a rodent maybe, has crawled into some nook or cranny and died there, judging by the smell. A sweet, putrid smell with a sting in it that reaches right to the back of your throat. Amy doesn't smell. Not yet. There is a whiff of household rubbish when he opens the bin, but that's not from her. When he upends it, she slides out onto the floor like one giant lump of limb, holding her shape. Legs bent, knees pulled up to her chest, arms tucked in front of her, head at an angle. He's taken aback to see that she's already stiff with death. He didn't think that would happen for hours yet. Lying on the floor, her pose is wholly unnatural and it unnerves him. He finds himself looking around her rather than at her. Her eyes are wide open and have turned cloudy and faintly blue, and the blood on her face and neck has dried and flaked and started to turn brown. He feels sorry for her, in a way. But for himself, too, just as much. He's failed to truly appreciate the waters of the canal until now. They do all the work. Absorb the body. Block the airways. Wash away the evidence. If no one notices the girl lying on the riverbed, the waters will even wait patiently for her insides to fill with gas and deliver her back to the surface, where it's unlikely she'll be missed the second time. He and Amy never made it to the canal. Nothing about last night went to plan. She wasn't supposed to come home after work, that was the first thing. He had let himself in to find something of hers, something he could take. Something that she would see and know without doubt was hers. Wonder what it was doing in a strange place. This proof that her private space had been infiltrated. It was his way.